the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. Covers Arizona Cardinals. My co-host here on episode 376, I believe it is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Sadly, the Cardinals did not pick up an upset win over the Philadelphia Eagles, but really, even though it ended badly and it was a little bit ugly early offensively, isn't this exactly what we wanted to see from the Cardinals in week five, essentially, after what we said on the show last week?
Yeah, I mean, they had a chance, and I got just absolutely roasted by Eagles fans on Bleeding Green Nation because I predicted a three-point loss, by the way, for the Arizona Cardinals, and I just got completely roasted by their fans. And, you know, it's disappointing that it ended that way, but I think the fact that they were there is, you know, nice, and it adds to what we've wanted to see.
Totally. It was disappointing. A 20-17 loss to the Eagles. Of course, the beginning of the game starts badly. Again, offensively, they go scoreless in the first quarter. Kyler Murray throws an interception. They go into halftime trailing. But then in the second half, things turn around. And defensively, let's be honest, they did pretty well. They were the first team this season to hold them. Well, they hadn't scored fewer than 24 points in a game this year and were averaging over 28, nearly 29 points a game entering the game. They had not been held to under 400 yards this season. The Cardinals held them to under 400 yards this season. A.J. Brown did not have an impactful game. And, you know, Jalen Hurts, if you look at his passing numbers, they were okay. They weren't great. But, I mean, they got themselves, they struggled on third down. But we're going to kind of talk about in this edition of the show, and we're going to do kind of what radio does. We're going to play the blame game. Whether we're going to be good at it or not, we'll have to see. But we're going to talk about the blame. Where does the blame go in this game? Because everyone has all sorts of opinions on that. We're going to talk about the plot, the positives and the negatives from this game. What was good, what was bad. How close are they? That's what I wanted to think. Like, how close are they? Are the Cardinals to being good? And then with DeAndre Hopkins' return coming in week seven, if the Cardinals can get to 3-3, there's a run of schedule. How many wins can they legitimately get with Hopkins back? If that and kind of what everyone feels is kind of a missing piece that will kind of be a game changer. And then, of course, we will preview their game against the Seattle Seahawks that they have on the road this week, a Seahawks team that is both surprising and odd. They are also 2-3 in the division. But let's get started with talking about the blame. We've heard all sorts of things from fans on social media, in the stadium. The easy thing is to blame Matt Amendola for missing the kick. They also blame Steve Keim for not bringing in a better kicker. They blame Cliff Kingsbury and his pass and his play calling. They blame Vance Joseph because they gave up a 17-play drive at the end of the game where Philadelphia took the lead, had that field goal. They blame Kyler Murray because clearly he sucks this year. If you were to assign blame in the loss, where would it, like, if or like, what's your blame share going to be?
I mean, I think everybody has a share of it, but it starts to me, and I know a lot of people are gonna disagree with me, it starts to me with management and in the GM, and I said this on Sunday after the game. And I feel like, you know, people, like you said, they want to blame Matt Amendola. I mean, okay, you can blame Matt Amendola, but the reality is, in his career, Matt Amendola was 2 for 8 from 40 yards or longer in field goals. And you chose to sign him. So you knew that coming into this, that you had signed a guy that this year alone or in his career is 25% from outside of 40 yards. So 1 for 4 of making it. And so then you go, okay, so whose fault is it next? Okay, so then do you blame Cliff that, you know, the guy's only a 20? I mean, if you, you know, do baseball or basketball or whatever, you know, and you're making a substitution at the end of the game, you don't put in a 25% free throw shooter, right? Like, you don't. And so that's the thing. So then do you blame Cliff for putting him in that situation, knowing that he's unlikely to make it? Do you blame Kyler because Kyler slid short of the first down and didn't give his team or have another play for his team to run that got them even closer for a kicker that struggles from outside of that distance? Like, you can blame everybody. I mean, do you blame Vance for his defense being unable to get off the field 17-play, 8-minute drive after you tie the game up? 17 plays, 8 minutes. I mean, there's blame all the way around. And for me, the last guy I blame is Matt Amendola. And it's easy to say, just make the kick, right? Like, you and I can say, just make the kick. Like, everybody can say, just make the kick. But the reality is, kicking's really hard. There's a reason that there's about, what, 20 good ones, and then 12 filter in and out of the league every year. And Amendola is one of those guys that's filtered in and out of the league the last 2 years. And you asked a guy to do something that he just flat out doesn't do well. He doesn't make kicks at 40-plus yards. So, again, are you surprised that he missed the kick? I mean, that's my question. Would you, like, when you just boil it all down at 43 yards, where you're like, oh, he's got this, you're probably thinking, not going to happen. Probably, yeah, should have gotten a little closer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, and I wrote about that after the game because, you know, for those who are talking about the coaching, that we're talking about the kicker, and especially after Justin Pugh kind of went off. And that was purposeful for a couple of things. I know, one, it was for fans, and two, it was for reporters. And just if you didn't hear, Justin Pugh sort of went off on the idea that it was like it was Amendola's fault. Now, I will say this: no one in the locker room there, among the reporters that were waiting, and we were like, there were reporters hovering and waiting for Amendola at his locker who had been sitting there several minutes. They were waiting for to be able to ask him questions. Pugh didn't like that. He viewed it as a kind of attack on him. And I know part of it was just being upset because of the loss. People, the guys in the locker room were upset. They felt that was a game they should have won. In fact, the last two games that they've lost at home, that's been the feeling in the locker room. But it's the idea. It was one play. He said, I missed blocks. It was, we needed to score touchdowns other times. And it's true. It is true. But, and I've completely forgot where I was going to go with this. But I mean, it was really important. And, what I wrote is that over the last 4.5 minutes, starting with a 3rd and 12 that the Cardinals had and failed to get Philly off the field, that's where there were about 6 things that went wrong, starting with that. So, like, if we're talking about total blame, you can blame a couple things. We can blame the fact that the Cardinals offense, for some reason, cannot execute early, and the Cardinals defense cannot stop the opposing team's scripted offense. They make great adjustments after that, but they struggle against what they're prepared for.
And isn't it ironic that both sides struggled, the scripted and the and you know,
it's so odd. It is so odd,
which makes you wonder. And you know, we talk about this like in our youth football stuff, and why it's so important. And I know people are gonna be like, "Well, we've been saying this," but like, it's why it's so important for them to get those reps against other teams, because sometimes you're really successful and you're like, okay, but is it against a good defense or is it against a bad defense? So like, that's the way I look at it sometimes. You know, it's do they have, and obviously we don't know because practice is closed, but do they have success on their scripted plays in practice, or on the flip side, do they struggle against a defense? And so it's like, oh, our defense is good against scripted plays. And it's like, well, you're stopping an offense that probably would struggle to score on air against scripted plays. Right? And so like, that's, you know, it's a chicken egg thing. I get it. But at the same time, it's ironic that both sides struggle with that and then they get into a flow. Now it would just be nice if the offense could get into a flow as fast as the defense has the last couple of weeks.
Well, and again, what we've said for all year is the offense was supposed to be the strength of the team. And there's a number of reasons why they've had some hiccups, but just the consistent lack of ability to do more than just get a first down early on is just maddening. And then the defense always gives up an early score every single time, so they're kind of behind the eight ball. Luckily, the defense kind of clamped up after that. But, you know, here are the six things that kind of went down. Now, first, that 17-play drive. They only had three third downs. It went, you know, they gained eight, then they gained three. So they got a first down on second down. They got a first down on second down. They had a third and one, picked up the first down. Then they had the third and 12. And that's where the problem happens, is that at 4.5 minutes, they have a third and 12. They're at the Arizona 36. And so they had the chance to get off the field on a long field goal by a replacement kicker. We need to remind everyone, it wasn't just the Cardinals who had a replacement kicker. The Eagles, Jake Elliott was hurt, and so they had Cameron Dicker, who has some clutch to him, because he in college, he was the kicker that beat Kyler Murray in that Texas-Oklahoma game where Texas had a big lead. Kyler Murray rallied him back, and then he got the game winner. But if they had gotten off the field on that third and 12, you're looking at a 40-plus field goal. And that's where the problem was, and that's the first mistake or bad thing that happened, and that was they get the pass to Dallas Goedert, and Dennis Gardick isn't able to make the initial tackle. He's able to get 16 yards. I would guess in that situation, if it were fourth and two, fourth and one, I think because the game was tied, maybe the Eagles decide to kick it. But they could have gotten off the field then, and then they didn't. Then they get down to... goal to go. And then Jalen Thompson makes the great play on third and five and breaks up the pass, but doesn't make they don't get the interception. They get the interception, then they start right there, and it's great. The problem is, he doesn't get the interception, which, I mean, that's a hard play to make. But two, he gets hurt. The Cardinals only had one timeout left, so they had to burn it. There was nothing anyone could have done. By rule, they lose the timeout. Then they get the ball back. Kelvin Beachum gets called for this. So they get a 7-yard pass play. First Kyler busts, you know, scrambles 15 yards. Zach Ertz for 7. So it's second and 3 at nearly midfield. And false start. I mean, Kelvin, you can't do that. It's one of those things that they get into situations of negative plays. Kelvin Beecham has a false start. The very next play, Zacherich is wide open. Kyler misses him. He's crossing across the field. Kyler just misses him. It would have been a massive play. But that doesn't matter. They still get Ertz. You know, Ertz picks up the first down and third down, and then you get to, you know, the famous part is Kyler runs for what we think is a first down, goes for the slide, and it turns out he started his slide before the sticks. It's really subjective, so wherever you basically begin to start to maybe think about sliding, the refs will, the officials will put it back. And that was the next thing that happened. So technically, Kyler slid too early. The problem was everyone thought it was a first down. Cliff thought it was a first down, and so they didn't wait for the ball to be spotted and to see that it wasn't, and so they were already in his ears. Clock, 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 clock. So they could spike and stop the ball. That they didn't realize it was third down, and that's what the problem was. And as Cliff said after the game, you know, the only other option you have is you've already committed a clock, so the only thing you could do is a run play if you want to get out of that. And then you hope you pick up the first down, but if you don't, then you are, you know, because it was, 22 seconds? 23 seconds is then you fail to get it, and then you have to hurry. He called that's the hurricane field goal, where you have to rush everyone. You've got 15 seconds to get everyone onto the field, set, snap the ball, kick the field goal from the same spot. Cliff said, and the kind of the goal was kind of inside 45. That was kind of the thing. It was a 43-ish and closer was kind of the plan. They weren't planning with what they had, the time management. They were planning on a field goal in that situation, because, you know, there's a lot that could happen, especially in that area. So they were content with kicking the field goal. It's just he missed it. So there were a number of things that went wrong. Now, if I'm going to place blame, I'm going to put some blame on Amendola. I'm going to put some blame on both sides of the ball for their slow start. And then, I mean, as hard as it is to do, you have to put just a touch. Like, you wish there was a way for, you know, in that situation, Kyler, instead of going for the slide, it didn't look like he was in any danger of getting hit, too. Instead of going for the slide, you go with the dive forward, just a touch more awareness. And then it was just dumb luck after that with a lot of the things that happened. So, but overall, there's a lot of things you can blame, but they faced a good football team. Philly's a good football. Philly, through the first 5 weeks of the season, through the first 4 weeks of the season, was playing like the most complete team in the league on both sides of the ball.
Well, and that's what's interesting to me is that, and you know, I don't want anybody to think that you and I are okay with the loss, because we're not. Like, in fact,
they should have won.
Right, it's disheartening. But the reality is nobody thought they would be there. And instead of being like, and I know there's no moral victories, but the reality is nobody expected them to be there. And the fact that they had a chance late and it just, they screwed it up, it happens. And it's unfortunate, but it's also one of those situations where it's like, you look at this team and where they are at, and the fact that against maybe the best team in the NFL right now, they're 3 or 4 mistakes away from winning. And by the way, the Eagles were almost mistake free.
Yeah. That's the other part, is that it was defensively, they were just the Eagle, like the Cardinals defensively were playing solid and didn't force any mistakes. And so Philly was playing very, very well. They were playing very well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like you said, they're a really good team. that has a lot of talent, and they're able to, you know, they're able to do things and win in different ways. And in this game, they ended up winning in a way that was kind of surprising, right? They grinded out a game against an opponent that hasn't particularly played well. And think about this. I mean, and there's no excuses, but think about the end of the game, right? The Cardinals are starting their third string center. You've got your top two running backs both injured, and they're still in a position to potentially tie or win that game.
Yeah, it really is, and that's kind of what I want to talk next. In a little bit, not quite yet. But let's move on from this. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk a little bit. Let's talk more about the game, but more specifically, what were the good things? We already kind of focused on the blame. So what are the good things? What were the positives that we get out of that game, even if in a loss? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk a little bit. Let's talk about the positives for the game. There are a lot we can pick and nitpick at this point. But there were a number of positive things, and I will say this. Very interesting how the locker room felt after that game. It was the same way in week three as well. Everyone in that locker room was upset. But it wasn't a pissed upset. It was an unsettled upset, like they lost an opportunity. They weren't down in the dumps. They were like... Kyler Murray, after this game, he wasn't sulking, but he was, you could tell, he was very, very affected by this loss, but not in a bad way. Like, he was upset that they weren't able to finish. I think this team, and in the next set, was like, I think this team's really close. And I think once they, if they can get a home win, assume they win. If they win this week, if they beat the Saints after Hopkins comes back, I think there will be a switch that flips and that they can get on a roll. We're going to talk about that next. But the positives. What was there to like about that game? Obviously, both the offense and the defense struggled early on. But what were the good things that you saw in this?
Well, I think the first thing that you saw was that they've got a really effective passing game when it's on. And that's the thing is, like, you've got Marquise Brown, who's playing like a superstar right now. You've got Rondale Moore, who they're getting into things and they've got Zach Ertz, who does a nice job as kind of a security blanket. Where they're lacking right now is finding a guy to kind of be the main possession receiver. They have kind of the possession receiver of Ertz, but they don't really have that.
Hasn't been
right
reliable enough,
the back shoulder guy,
yeah,
or that type
and
of stuff.
And they're definitely missing Hopkins. I mean, they're definitely shorthanded, and you have to look at Kyler's numbers don't look good this year, and he's made a couple of mistakes, but if you watch the games, especially after the first quarter, it isn't necessarily Kyler that is playing poorly in those scoreless quarters. But you watch his quarterbacking. He's being a very good quarterback without getting results.
Yeah, and you're seeing the growth and the improvement that everybody, you know, wanted to see. But the problem is, like you said, it's statistically not doing it. So then that means he's
regressing, is what everyone's saying.
And so it's like, oh, he's winning more from the pocket. Well, but he's not running the ball and doing all that stuff, you know, that you expect. And so it's just, I don't know. It's just interesting how, what the expectations were. And, you know, you never want to be like, have you watched other games? But like, I don't know if you watched the Ravens Bengals game.
I didn't see a lot of it
on Sunday Night Football, but Lamar Jackson missed two or three throws in the level of the Ertz miss, and probably worse. And guess what happened? Oh, they won because other players made a play when needed. And so that's kind of what it is. Is like, I think my frustration more than anything is that you've got a guy in Kyler who's pretty much has to be the reason they win, but also has to shoulder the blame for all the losses.
Yeah. I mean, it comes to the territory. It does.
It does. Yeah. 100% it does.
And he understands that too.
And so that's the thing, is like, that's how it works, is being the quarterback. And so, you know, you get that and you kind of move on from it. Reality is they're just, you know, they're close in a lot of ways, like you said, and they're just making mistakes. I mean, we can point some of them out just from this game, right? Like you look at the positive of like Rondell Moore had two really, really big plays. But like there were two other plays where if one guy does their job, you're talking about four explosive plays in a game.
Yes. And here's the thing people keep talking about. You got to play Trey McBride. You got to play the young guys. Look at two of the big negative plays. We'll look at the fourth and two against Carolina when Brian Burns blew up Rondell Moore. And then there was a jet sweep that went for -5 to on Sunday. You know who missed a block on both of those? It was Mr. Young Guy Trey McBride. Those are growing pains. But when he blocks no one, like he blocked nobody. So you're assuming, and on at least on this one, he was the one pulling, he was the one moving in front of Moore, and there was a guy that got free and he kind of hesitated to block him, but then decided to move ahead to block the next guy that there wasn't, because it didn't matter, because Moore got tackled for 5 yard loss. And so, you know, like people are criticizing the play choice or how their usage of Moore, when if one guy makes a block that they're supposed to make, that play is effective.
Yeah. And so that's the thing, is like, you know, and so the positives in this game are that like they are close. They're missing on simple things that you feel like can be cleaned up. Like it's not a deficiency of talent. It's just mental or physical errors. And I think the mental errors are what frustrate the coaches more than the physical errors.
Like, yeah.
Think about the Marquise Brown drop after he makes just a spectacular catch and run early in the game. And then
he's coming across the field. There's all this green. And you know what it is. We've seen it dozens of times with the receivers. His eyeballs got ahead of himself. And so he doesn't look the ball all the way in. And then he bobbles it. It would have been a touchdown. It really would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, it probably would have been a touchdown. And then you know, and so that's what you look at. I think another positive thing that you're seeing is like, think about, again, what they did to this Philadelphia offense. You know, yeah, the first drive was bad and they went down and scored, but you had Zach Allen get another sack.
Oh, he's so good.
You were constantly getting pressure on Jalen Hurts. And I know they had a banged up offensive line too. I mean, you know, let's be honest with that.
Yeah, they were without Jordan Mailata. They lost Dickerson and they lost Jason Kelce, but both Dickerson and Kelce played in the second half.
Yeah, they both came back. You know, so but you look at the things that they did in the game, right? So in this game, you had Miles Sanders had 15 carries for 58 yards. So that's less than 4 yards a carry, right? Jalen Hurts had 15 for 61. So just a titch over 4 yards per carry.
And they did lose. I mean, there were a couple of Jalen Hurts plays where you're like, oh, and that's going to happen against quarterbacks like that,
right?
Where you look like you're going to get him, but then there's no contain and he takes off. But, you know, one thing that I really was pleasantly surprised, because it's one of the things I was most concerned about with no Rodney Hudson, having to go against their interior defensive line, which includes, you know, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, and rookie Jordan Davis. Those are very, very strong athletic players. You know who played really well? Sean Harlow. That was a pleasant surprise. Is that,
well, Harlow. Great. Yeah, Harlow played great. Think about this, though. You know, we all, and by all, I mean not Justin and I, but everybody else, really, really likes to complain about Rondale Moore's usage, right? They just don't give him the ball in space, you know, blah, blah, blah. The Cardinals held Devontae Smith to 10 catches for 87 yards. By the way, his long was 22 yards, so he had 9 receptions for 65 yards other than his one 22-yard reception. A.J. Brown, 3 catches, 32 yards.
That happened all in the first drive.
And so, yes, the frustration, I get it, with the outcome of the game. 1,000% understand that frustration. But the fact that you were able to do such a good job against this team that is supposed to be, you know, the best in the NFL, you really showed that you're close. And I think that's what the most positive aspect of this whole situation is that you've got guys that are stepping up. I mean, no more can be said than Zach Allen and Byron Murphy Jr.
Oh my gosh.
Like, both of them look like they're close to being franchise caliber players. And we were, I mean, Allen was a slightly different thing, 'cause we're like, if he just stays healthy, maybe this is the year. But like, we were genuinely discussing whether or not you should even bring back Byron Murphy.
Right. Like, he was that, with all the talk that the organization had, let's talk about that a little bit. They've been talking about how great he is in the slot, yet he's turned into a perimeter stud this year. Cause I don't think has he even played in the slot this year? I don't think he has.
No, I mean, I don't think too much. I mean, I know he's probably lined up there from time to time.
Maybe.
And I can look at the
But that's only in certain cases, because there haven't been many times where he's like, maybe a handful of times.
But he's shadowing the guy. Most
right,
of the
right.
Time.
Those 3 A.J. Brown catches came against Marco Wilson all on the first drive when they scored the touchdown. He didn't have a catch after that because Byron was covering him after that. Because Byron also sniffed out a couple of plays with Devontae Smith. He's playing out of his mind right now. It's really good to see. And he's doing it. But here's the most important part. He's doing it when the truth is, for the first 5 weeks of the season, the Cardinals have had exactly 2 cornerbacks they can trust. Only 2 cornerbacks that you want to see on the field. People want to see Trayvon Mullen, but he was still learning the system, and the second he, you know, literally the first game that he plays, he gets hurt. And so you get Antonio Hamilton back, who's barely had a chance to play. Isaiah Simmons, his usage, he's playing in the slot, and that's almost it. And it wasn't just, it's not just like a big nickel. They used him in the slot. Like, he was lined up against Quez Watkins a bunch.
Yeah, and so you look at it like, Byron's playing the slot when the guy he's shadowing goes in the slot. Like, that's basically it. So, like, last game, he played 13 snaps in the slot. And he's lining up there not to take on Quez Watkins, right? He's lining up there because they're trying to get A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, whoever he was on those particular snaps. They're trying to get them open. And so that's the thing you look at, man, is you look at the growth of a guy blossoming into a potential superstar and how important that is at a position of need that, let's be honest, that they haven't prioritized either in the draft. Like, Murph is the one guy that they've drafted in the top 100.
Yeah.
Since Patrick.
Yeah. It's for real. Wait.
Well, Brandon Williams was he might have been, but he was a
yes. And Jamel Fleming, but that might have no Jamel Fleming. I think was there in there too.
And he back. Okay, so we'll say top
top
two rounds at least, because Fleming was a third round pick, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. But that was always all the way back in 2012.
And so, like, you just look at it, man. It's just crazy to look at how they've finally got guys that are, like you said, are starting to blossom and turn in to solid contributors on at key positions. And there's one left, really, and it's kind of the flashing red light of what this team lacks, and that's a guy that can rush off the edge.
And that's been, and they're doing this with virtually zero production from their edge guys. Now, I will say they've been using J.J. Watt and Zach Allen in off the edge as they go with a very 4-3 looking 3-4. But you've got nothing for Marcus Golden. You're getting just a little. You can't expect a ton from Dennis Gardeck. You're getting nothing from Devon Connard. Victor DeMacagy hasn't done anything. They really haven't used Cameron Thomas off the edge. They have him in their NASCAR package. IJ Sanders had 8 snaps. He made his debut.
I was gonna say he got 8 snaps.
like he made his debut and played 8 snaps. But it was good to see him there. But yeah, and that's a lot to like. And the offensive line, let's be honest, the offensive line is playing well. You know who's been the weak link on the offensive line this year so far? Calvin Beecham.
I was going to say Beecham.
It's Beecham.
And which is good and bad. It's good because, you know, it means your young guys are all stepping up. It's bad because I feel like they do have an upgrade there in Josh Jones, but they're very...
But I think what Beecham probably right now is the more consistent one. Like, he gives you on the 70 snaps, he gives you 65 reliable ones, and then five to seven where he looks terrible.
Right. And so that's what the question becomes. And so that's the thing is, like, I mean, you've got to be really excited about what Will Hernandez has done this year. He looks like a guy that they should resign, right?
Yep.
Like that should, I mean, it looks like the offensive line next year should be DJ Humphreys. I'm gonna guess they're gonna start with looking at Marquise Hayes because they liked him so much. The center position is an unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Will Hernandez and Josh Jones, like, that looks like,
yes.
but you should know going into the year 3 of the guys, and that would be, I mean, that would be a big boost for them, would it not?
Totally. That's great to see. That's great to see.
Well, and I think the last positive thing we need to talk about is, like, think about the running game. And we talked a little bit about
Eno. Oh my goodness.
Like, they had a really negative game just in terms of player health. And yet somehow in this game, the Cardinals had I would, it's close, but you could almost say a better running day than the Philadelphia Eagles, because they had 26 carries.
Yeah, they averaged 4.8 to the Eagles 4.2, And that was then that's including because Hurts rushed for more than Kyler did.
Yeah. And so like, that's the thing is like you just, and that goes back to the offensive line. That goes back to, we talked about it early. Kyler starting to recognize the holes in the defense and making the audibles so that they get into the right plays and get into positive plays. And like all of that is a positive situation. There was just a negative result at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we saw some explosive plays from Connor, which we hadn't seen this year. Like Eno's rushing numbers don't look great. I mean, he had 8 for 25 yards, but he had the 11 yarder. He's also make plays in the passing game. So if you look at, he had a total of 11 touches for 53 yards on the afternoon. And the fact that he was able to gut out that game, get that touchdown, was huge. And it looks like we're probably going to be without Connor. Well, and we know that Jay Ward is going to be out. He pulled his hamstring. He's not going to come back from that week. Connor and Daryl Williams are all hurt. So Eno might be the lead guy. We can see Keontae Ingram. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a bit. There are, you know, AJ Green, that end of the game showed some life. And maybe that's something to build on, maybe, because he went AWOL for a bit. And he showed some life there late in the game. And on a positive is maybe Matt Prater can kick this week. Maybe. Maybe,
right,
please. Because you know who's even better? I think Prater, and I think I saw the stat in those end of game clutch situations. I don't think Prater's ever missed on one.
Yeah, that's they actually said that stat. He's the only guy with a better career clutch kick, like gaming tying than Justin Tucker, which is, you know, obviously the greatest kicker of all time.
Yeah, he's something else. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk of the web. Let's talk about how close we think they are. And we kind of talked about that. How close are they to turning this around? How close are they to being good? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals are 2-3. There are some things that are incredibly frustrating. But it feels, in my eyes, it feels like they're really close. The first game was a disaster. The first half of the second game was a disaster. The Rams game was disappointing. The first part of the Panthers game, but then they got on a roll. In this game, the end was disappointing, but the overall product was not. And the locker room is interesting. Because they're facing adversity, they're not quitting. They're not like destroying things pissed. But there's a feeling that I'm getting that this team is just so. And maybe it's as simple as getting Hopkins back. But it feels like that they are just on the other side of being good while still doing bad things.
Yeah. And like I said, like you look at just normal certain things, right? Like you've got Kyler underthrowing a deep ball. You've got Kyler missing Zach Ertz on an open throw. So those are two negatives. You know, we won't even talk about like the end of the game thing, but like just two negative throws, right? And those are plays that need to be made. You had the drop by Marquise Brown. You had the drop by Zach Ertz. Those are two key plays that need to be made. You had the missed block by Trey McBride. That's a play that just has to be made. And so, like, all of this goes to the thing of, like, you know, they're close. You know, you like you said earlier, you had the Dennis Gardeck thing where he's literally standing right next to the guy getting the football, and he's like, oh yeah, I gotta tackle that guy too. And so maybe you go, well, that's not Vance. He shouldn't have him in that position. Okay. All right. You know what? You're saying the usage of a player is incorrect and you're not putting him in the best position to be successful. I will be okay with that reasoning. However, what I won't be okay with is the fact that whether or not that's the best use of a player is irrelevant in the situation. You got to make that play, man.
Like, right.
You just, it's a clutch situation. Your offense just tied up the game, a chance to beat the number one team record wise in the NFL. And somebody's got to make a play.
Yeah. If Gardeck can make that tackle, and we'll say this, Gardeck has been exactly what we could have hoped he'd been, but that play just sucked
him to be.
And that's a play you just wish you had back because you know, it was on the most critical moment. It's on third down. It's third and long, third and 12. You tackle him for an 8-yard gain. It's fourth and 4 from the 27, and then you're facing a 45-yard field goal. A 45-yard field goal. We saw Matt Amendola miss a 43-yard field goal. There is no automatic 45-yard field goal in the NFL. They're most starters, yes, it's automatic. But at least, and then you've got 4 minutes left in the game instead of having two, and you still got that timeout. So there's the other thing, is that you still have your timeouts. Because it wasn't it after that that they had to burn all three, burn their two, and then the last one with the Jalen one. They ended up burning their timeouts after that play.
Right, and it's just, again, it's just little stuff like that. Like, you know, people are criticizing, why not take a timeout before the two-minute warning? Well, you let the two-minute warning be a timeout. Like, that's the thing, is Cliff played the timeout game perfectly. He just got burned on
Thompson.
The wind knocked out of him.
Yeah.
And you know what? Nobody really even, and I don't mean this to sound like negative towards Jalen Thompson, nobody even cares if he picks the ball off, right? People are like, oh man, he's hurt. It cost us a timeout. But great play, man. Like, who cares? And that's, you know, that's the frustrating thing, is like, Both the interceptions he didn't get were very, very tough plays. So I don't want anybody to think I'm saying like those, you know, but that's the difference between a good team and an average team. At the end of the day, is a good team makes great plays. An average team makes plays they're supposed to make, but they don't make special plays. And right now, I think that's the best way to describe the Cardinals. They're not making any special plays.
Yeah, great way to say it. The special plays that they had happened against Oakland the second half by Kyler.
Right. They were like special in the history of the NFL type plays. They weren't like, oh, Marquise Brown catches a 82-yard touchdown pass. They were, oh my God, Kyler ran around for 22 seconds
two-point conversion
to get a 2-point conversion. Like, that to me is, you know, and so that's what they're missing, is like you said, like, you know, you look at it, Hollywood 3 games ago doesn't lay out for a deep one. Last game, you know, he gets PI'd at the one and doesn't, you know, catch a deep ball.
And Isabella stops on a route.
Yeah. And then you've got this week, he drops a wide open pass where he goes 80-ish yards to the house. And like, all of those things are, that's what teams that are either, and this will be kind of what defines the Cardinals. If that is how they continue to go, then they're a bad team. Like, bad teams don't make those plays. But if they start to make those plays, then you'll see like, oh, this is a good team. They were just missing those plays. And that's how you, that's to me what tells you how close they are. Is like, if they start making those plays, then they're in the right spot.
Coming on the Rusty Red Podcast, Mr. R. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're expecting DeAndre Hopkins back in week 7. And the Cardinals appear to have gotten past the toughest part of their schedule. With Seattle, and then with the return of Hopkins, how many wins do we think that the Cardinals can get? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk about. The Cardinals are 2-3. If they beat the Seahawks this week, they're at 3-3. And they get DeAndre Hopkins back, and they hit a part of their schedule which looks pretty good, including this week. Let's look at the teams that they have coming up. You've got the Seahawks on the road. You've got the Saints at home. You've got the Vikings on the road. You've got the Seahawks at home. And then you've got the Rams at home before you go to Mexico City. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games. Now, this is the optimist in me. If they can win this week, which I believe this game is a winnable game, Seattle's defense is bad. Their offense has been good, but the Cardinals have also stopped good offenses. And so, there is the possibility the Saints have problems. The Vikings, they're playing well right now, but they're not dominating. The Seahawks again, and the Rams look really bad right now. I could possibly, like, if they can get, so there is, for me, the potential for 5 wins in a row right now. And I know that part of that is I look super positive on things, but I think they have 5 very winnable games coming up right now. You looked at the schedule at the beginning of the year. You didn't think that the Chiefs, you could beat the kid, but it's not one you consider a winnable game. The Cardinals, Raiders, Rams, those were all games that didn't look super winnable. The Eagles game, once the season started, didn't look very winnable. But now you've got 5 games in a row. 5 games in a row of teams that it's not winnable you can, but you think maybe you should win. At least you should win 3 of them, minimum, right?
When you look at it, to your point, you've got, you know, a game against Seattle who, like you said, they're not the terrible dumpster fire that we expected, but they're 7th in points, 31st in points against. Their defense is just atrocious. They just gave up 39 points to the Saints. The week before, they gave up 45 points to the Lions, and people will be like, well, the Lions were playing really good.
They got shut out.
And they just got shut out by the New England Patriots. And I mean,
Bailey Zappi. They got beat by Bailey Zappi.
Right. And the Patriots hadn't exactly been like mowing people down. So, you know, it's just, it's tough. You start with that game. Right. And then, like you said, then you get the Saints, who are nothing to write home about right now, on a short week. The Saints play the Bengals this week. So that, you know, that's going to be a tough game for them. And then you go to the Vikings, and that Vikings team,
you don't know what to think. You don't know what to think about them.
Their record looks really good, but the fact is, like, you look at their wins. Outside of their first win, which was really impressive, their 23-7 win, they got beat by the Eagles 24-7. They beat the Lions 28-24. They beat the Saints in London 28-25. Then they beat the Bears 29-22.
And the Bears are not good.
And so they're like all over the place. So like, yeah, it's a run where, and then you get Seattle back. And so it's like, it's a run where you should be able to, like, you're like 3-1, 4-0 should be the goal. Like, it should be the goal and should be realistic.
And so, yeah, you should be looking at, and even if, and then you go to the Rams, and honestly, after losing to the home, kind of what we're thinking this year, you need to be 3-3 in the division. Like, I always say that if you want to be a playoff team, you've got to be 3-3 in the division at least. Now, we think that maybe they can sweep the Seahawks, but you want to get a split. You There's a number of reasons. One, you need division wins. Two, if you split with a division team, then you guarantee that they will not hold a head-to-head tiebreak, at least. You don't want to give up the head-to-head tiebreak because that's the first thing that comes into play for tiebreakers in the division is head-to-head. So if you split it, so, you know, we could, like, I would love the things to turn around. And if they can turn things around and maybe get, instead of like an ugly game, they play well from the beginning, that kind of gets things rolling. They get Hopkins back, and then they start playing well. This is a team I could see rattling off as many games in a row before Mexico City. And then you're looking at a 7-3 team. And then you feel good, right?
Yeah, but even like you said, like 5 wins is a lot. But even if you're 6-4 going into Mexico City, you still feel better about where you're at.
You finally get ahead of the stick. And then, you know, if you're looking like the 2017 season when we had all those expectations, I'm sorry, the 2016 season had all these expectations, and they just never get over 500.
Right. And so, like, that's the big thing for them is they've got to – you've just got to find a way to get over the hump. And that's – I mean, that's kind of the story of the season, though, right? On everything. Like,
yes.
Find a way to get over the hump, and they haven't been able to do it yet.
Exactly. Coming next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the MSR Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks, this game coming up. It's a critical game for them. It's a division game. You don't want to go to 0-2 the division. All the stuff. That's coming up on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've got the Seattle Seahawks this week, a team that is it's bad on defense, surprisingly good on offense after a slow start this year. Geno Smith looking like the player you thought he could be 10 years ago when you loved him coming out of the draft. Geno Smith has been a revelation. They still have great talented receiver with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Lockett has been so productive this year. And then Rashad Penny was looking great again, and he just broke his leg. So that's a big loss. They struggle at linebacker hits. And, you know, remember they cut Bobby Wagner this last offseason? Linebacker's been a mess this year. What should we know about Seahawks team? Now, they've got a rookie, that Ken Walker, that people are really excited about. But without Rashad Penny, what can we expect from this Seattle offense?
You know, it'll be interesting. You think it would go more towards Geno in this case, because, like, through 4 games, and like you said, people are really excited about Kenneth Walker, but through 4 games, his rushing attempts have been 4, 3, 8, and 8. So, and then his receptions have been 2, 3, and 1. Had 0 receptions last game. So you look at it, he's somebody that they should be excited about, but he hasn't done anything yet to make you feel like he is a guy that is going to beat you. Now, we know he's a talented kid. I mean, obviously, you don't get drafted that highly. But the big thing is this week is you've got to find a way to continue to play solid pass defense, which has been really surprising, right? Tyler Lockett's just doing Tyler Lockett things. I mean, on the season, he has 406 receiving yards, and, you know, so I mean, the dude's on pace for just under 1400 yards. DK Metcalf right under that, he's on at 372, so, you know, he's on pace for just under 1300 yards. The interesting thing is the guy that leads them in touchdowns overall. So, you know, you've got like you said, you've got Rashad Penny, who had been averaging, I mean, Rashad Penny had been averaging over 6 yards per carry.
And he was doing that after he had an incredible run at the end of last year. He led the league last year in runs per carry, and he basically didn't do anything for the first 10 games of the year.
Right. He led the league at 6.3 yards per carry last
year.
He
kept on with that absolute. He's been great, which we knew that he had the potential to. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy, and there it is again. Breaks his leg.
Yeah. And but it's crazy, man. Will Disley leads them in touchdowns. 3 receiving touchdowns on the season. And what makes it crazy is he only has 14 catches. So
it's like the Travis Kelce line from Monday night. 7 right. catches, 25 yards, and 4 scores.
Right. And so, you know, when they do get into the red zone, they like to go to Disley, which is shocking with DK Metcalf and Rashad Penny. But, I mean, Shane Waldron is, you know, their tight ends have 5 touchdowns combined between Disley, Colby Parkinson, and Noah Fant. So it's not crazy, but it is a little surprising when you look at everybody else they have. Outside of that, man, it's just been, I mean, they're pretty straightforward. Lockett, Metcalf, and now Walker will be the guys. Before that, it was Penny. And so it'll just be about stopping those guys. I mean, Disley has 137 yards on the season. I mean, he's not doing anything, but he's the guy that you know, finishes things off.
So they're a team that if you can keep them out of the red zone, then you're going to limit that. They're 31st in points allowed and dead last in yards. The Seahawks.
Yeah. You know what, though? They have a really, really exciting player and a guy that I loved coming out. We talked about him numerous times, whether it was on your podcast or our podcast or the other podcast that we do. And the reason I love this guy was because it was just such a random thing for a guy from UTSA to be 6'4", 205 pounds with that freak athleticism. And Tariq Woolen has been blossoming into a star. Now he's really the only one on defense. And that makes it, I mean, you look at it, he has 3 interceptions. Nobody else has 1. He has 4 passes defensed. The next cornerback has 3. The next corner after that, there isn't one. Like, yeah. they're just not.
And Wosu's got 3, but those are line of scrimmage type things. And
right.
And you know.
Right. And so, and then you mentioned in Wosu, he's got 2 sacks. They're not really getting after the quarterback. I'm in a super weird fantasy, dynasty fantasy league where you can only play players in their first 4 years of being out of the draft. And so I have Daryl Taylor, and I was really expecting him to kind of pick up where he left off at the end of last year, where he had 6.5 sacks. Dude's got 1 this year. He's killing me. And and I play him every week, and he's got 1 freaking sack. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is you've got a team that is allowing an absurd, absurd amount of points, and now you've got a chance to kind of get right offensively. The big question is, can you hang with them? Can you? And that's the thing. This is a team you cannot afford to.
They got to score early.
Yeah, let them get out to a 14-0 lead. Because if that happens, I'm going to say that they're going to run away with it. But like, I would be more concerned if they still had Rashad Penny. But at the same time, I don't want Kenneth Walker to have his Terrell Davis welcome to the NFL moment against the Cardinals. I've seen enough of those.
Though we will say this, their 2 wins are by a combined 4 points.
Right. They haven't. That's the thing. They're a very funny team. They beat the Broncos, like you said, 17-16, the Broncos.
They were in that, okay, I will say, while they played their tails off in that game, they shouldn't have lost that. They shouldn't have won that game. Denver fumbled twice at the goal line, and then Nathaniel Hackett decided to go for a 65-yard field goal.
Yeah, and then, you know, they got blitzed by the 49ers. They lost to the Falcons.
Falcons aren't good.
And that was in Seattle. You know, they beat a bad Detroit team, 48-45, and Detroit might be the one of the worst teams in the NFL. And then
they got Taysom Hill'd. They were Taysom Hill'd. Three rushing yards and three touchdowns by Taysom Hill, and he threw a touchdown pass as well. Alvin Kamara had 193 yards from scrimmage as well. They gave up over 230 rushing yards in that game. 235 rushing yards in that game against the Saints. Yikes.
Yeah, and so, like, this is a game I honestly think.
Oh, my gosh, their rush defense, 189. 179, 145, 235. It's a bummer. It really is a bummer that the Cardinals have banged up running backs because, so I've got Keontae Ingram. So if you got a 1-2 punch of Eno Benjamin and Keontae Ingram, this could be a really fun game if Ingram ends up being the number two this week. We could see some fun numbers that fans are going to go goo-goo gaga over and then be upset when he's inactive after.
Right. Yeah, so it'll be interesting, but yeah, it's been it's a game where you have to be excited about what you could see offensively, and this is it's interesting because they could have two really fun get right games offensively in the next two that make you a little more excited about everything, and then look, they're 4-3, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, but you know, get to 4-3. Once you're there, like, you got to get to 3-3 first.
Right.
And I think they have a really good chance to do that this weekend. And I would actually pick them to do so.
I think so too. I think this is a game where I like picking them to win every, but I think this is a game where that offense starts clicking.
Well, by the way, you and I both picked them to lose by 3 points.
Yeah.
I think I picked them by four.
I had them picked to cover.
We both had them in we saw the game playing out similar to what it did. We just expected them not to have any time left on the clock when they had to go down
right.
the field, and instead they did. And now we've had to talk or listen and talk about it for 3 days after the game's
exactly.
over.
The more I look at the defense, and I know that they're going to be. It's a division game. Cardinals. I will say this. The Cardinals are 6-2 in Lumen Field over the last 8 years. Now, over the last couple of years, they went in there, 2 years ago, they finally got right where they won at home and they lost on the road. But this Seattle team, they're always a dangerous, and I thought that coming into this year that they were going to be a tough team. I am so surprised at Geno Smith, but after seeing what the Cardinals have done defensively over the last 3.5 games, I believe that they will be able to limit Seattle this week. That they won't be able to be nearly as explosive as they have been. When we're looking at these top receiver productions, Davante Adams, 2 catches. Cooper Kupp, 4 catches. They had DJ Moore had 6 for 50 or something like that. And then they got AJ Brown with 3 catches in the first drive and then not a single catch the rest of the game. The pass defense has been really good. And without Rashad Penny, I don't think that they're going to be nearly as strong in the run game. And without the strength of the run game, I think that pass attack will be different. I think the Cardinals are going to – do I want to say they're going to get – the 30s. I don't know if they're going to get the 30s, but I think that this could be the 30-point explosion. And I'm going to say that they're going to win this game 28-13.
Yeah, and I was going to say this is the game that they explode. I'm going to say 38-28.
Ooh, that'll be fun. And so they will be high scoring ultimately. But let's be honest, isn't this the way Geno is playing now? Isn't this kind of what you envisioned him being able to do when he came out of college?
Yeah, I thought he was a guy that could be a good quarterback in the NFL. I'm not going to say I thought he would be a superstar or an MVP candidate, and I'm not sure he is yet. But, he's a guy that had the arm. He was able to make throws, and he seemed like a more composed and smart quarterback than what he showed
when he was with the Jets.
When he was with the Jets.
Let's be honest. The Jets ruin quarterbacks. They do. They just ruin quarterbacks. So,
So it's one of those things that I'm glad he's having success. I'm glad that he's, you know, doing well. I hope he sucks this week.
Or that, or anything. He can suck this week, or at least the far enough behind where he has to try and do too much. It's really interesting what's happening this year is because when we've seen him in action before, that offense has been super limited. And maybe it was finally getting enough reps with it that he felt like he could cut it loose, because when he filled in last year for Russell Wilson, I mean, that it reminded me of that first game of the year. They had a couple explosive plays, but most it just wasn't there. Like, they weren't producing at all because he was being very safe. And maybe it's the fact that was being what he's being asked to do. And now, you know, he's getting the right balance. They've had a good running attack, and they're able to do exactly what Pete Carroll's wanted. But for what Pete Carroll wants, you got to have a really good defense. And they do not have that this year. They have a terrible defense. And so let's have at it. I'd also like this to be the game where the pass rush finally finishes. They've finished better. They've had two sacks in each of the last two games. But I would love to see this where you see a breakout, where Marcus Golden gets a sack. Zach Allen gets another sack, where you get kind of four sacks in a game, and Geno's like, because Geno's never started a game at the Cardinals, and the time that he's played the Cardinals, he's not looked good in his
Correct.
Career.
And so let's just hope that continues this week.
And with that, we will wrap this edition of the Rise of Secret podcast. We've got two guys predicting big Cardinals wins for the weekend to get them to 3-3. If they get to 3-3, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. We think they're close. We're going to have a short turnaround because we'll record next Tuesday, and then we'll have the Thursday night game, and then you'll just have to wait till we talk about, we'll have to wait a few days to talk about the Saints game properly, unless we get, you know, over anxious and decide to do it before then, but probably not. Anyway, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess. It's the Rise of Seaward podcast, the best of Cardinals talk, and we'll be back again, of course, next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!